Hello and welcome to All About Symbian, insight number 94. Yes, it's only been a few days since 93, but we're so much to get through. We're bunching them up slightly to give you more and more content. Hopefully you're not going to complain. With me, I have...
Rafe Blanford.
Anne up in Scotland.
Oh, hello! It's just me, still. Ewan Spence. Hello, everybody.
There we go. The whole rack of stuff to get through yet again. A bit of a C2009 show errata. Things that were announced and we haven't actually covered yet. First of all, there's a new phone, Rafe. Can you give the details?
Yes, this is the Nokia 6788. The reason we haven't mentioned this, it wasn't actually directly announced at the show. It was announced on the morning that the show began, and this phone wasn't actually on display at the show itself. And the reason we want to mention this briefly is that this is Nokia's first TD-SCDMA phone. You're probably going, what's that? Well, that is Chinese 3G. And what they've done in China, they have their own version of the 3G standard, and it's being used by China Mobile, which is China's biggest mobile operator. And Nokia produced effectively their first S60 phone for this standard. It's fairly standard S60 phone in many ways. It's a vertical slider with a 5-megapixel camera, a non-touch device, so it's at 63rd edition feature pack 2 and has much of the standard stuff on it in terms of applications and services. I haven't seen one of these in person, so I can't really tell you very much about it, but it's really significant because Nokia's getting into this Chinese 3G market, which potentially could be very big indeed, and it's one of the first smartphones actually to be available for this technology, and certainly one of the first mainstream ones. Nokia expect this to go on sale. Obviously it will only be available in China, but they expect it to go on sale by the end of this year. So I think it really marks the flexibility of S60 as a platform. That was announced a while, but they were working on the TD-SCDMA integration, which is by no means completely straightforward. And some of this work, I think, has been done by Digia as well as Telica. And now we have the first phone. And I suspect there will be plenty more of these to come in the future. But for now, you know, it's really a case of S60 expanding once again into new markets. And, you know, obviously in a country like China with a population of over a billion people, even though it's just on one operator, it's still potentially a very big market indeed.
Yeah. But sorry to come back to you again, Rafe, but also something I think only you are qualified to comment on. Symbian have, ahead of schedule, open sourced their kernel, EKA2. What on earth is EKA2?
So basically, the kernel is the bit of the operating system that's at the sort of heart of the phone, or the heart of the way things do, does things. It manages many of the operations to make sure, you know, the processor, memory, etc. is being shared out. I mean, there's obviously technical explanations of kernels, which we won't go into here because, you know, to be honest, they're a bit beyond what I want to explain. But the important point about EKA2 is that you're a micro kernel. And in terms of its sort of technological advancement, most people reckon that it's about 2 or even 3 years ahead of what you have on any other mobile platform. And it's the reason that the Symbian operating system is able to operate on less resources, using less power than most of its competitors. You know, we often talk about battery life on the podcast here, and really one of the key reasons for this is the power management that's enabled by EKA2. And certainly we've noticed over the years that the Symbian phones typically have battery life. I think when you're talking about similar capacities, anything up to 50% better. The significance here of the open sourcing is obviously that people will be able to see how they've done it, play about with it, and maybe even improve it. Because along with the actual open source code itself, Symbian have released a kit that enables you to effectively, for practical applications, or at least add modifications to it and see how they work. It includes sort of a command line version of Symbian 3.
Is it going to be a good idea opening up something as complex as an operating system kernel to Joe Bloggs sitting in his back bedroom?
I mean, it's not really aimed at Joe Bloggs in his back bedroom. You know, this is people who play with kernels all the time that have had a look at the Linux kernel and want to see how Symbian have done things. And this isn't really a consumer announcement as such, and really has... Okay. I mean, I'm struggling to find a benefit from them, and really it's about the ancillary benefits that they'll get from other people being able to play with it. And, you know, as I say, kernel is right at the heart of the operating system, and so it's kind of I suppose you could call it a cornerstone or a keystone of an arch for the Symbian operating system. This is one of their crown jewels in their sort of technological innovation that's been developed over the last 10 years. So really it's a statement of intent as much as anything. But with the added benefit, they've actually released this properly. It's not just the code they've released. They have released this whole development kit that goes with it. So practically people really can actually contribute, maybe change it around, play with it maybe at the university level, or, you know, the companies who are deeply into Symbian, who, you know, actually do a lot of the work in terms of integration, can look at this. The code is available, which makes it that much easier to fix problems if they do come up. And as I say, a statement of intent and a sign that, as you say, Symbian are ahead of schedule for releasing everything through through EPL into open source.
I think one of the things is, it's not the fact that nobody's going to use it, Steve. It's a statement of intent. Do you remember, and I'm going to get my money ready here. There we go. Do you remember when Scion released their SDKs for the Series 5 and 5MX? They've released a source code for the word processor as well. And it only took up about 38K because of the huge amount of repetition and reuse of all the codes that was put in there. I think they did that because they were proud of it. They could show what it did because it was a much better system. It's four times more efficient than the equivalent Windows Mobile code at the time. And the Symbian Foundation are using this as a statement as well. They're going, this is what we do. This is why, even after 10, 15, 20 years going back to the VAX machines, this is why we know mobiles, we know operating systems, we know kernels. Okay, yes, Google Android is out there with the Linux kernel, but to all intents and purposes, there's a lot of bad blood in that. It's not as flexible as it is. There's a lot of hard coding and changes of how Linux works away from the book, sort of mistakes that Symbian made with Symbian C++ that they're now correcting. But by putting this out there, they're making a statement. They're also showing, look, code can be beautiful. Our code is beautiful. It does it well, and it does it better than anybody else out there. This isn't aimed at the man in the street. This is aimed at maybe about 30 or 40 people who like falling off their stools while listening to a recording. I know it's an impressive speech here, guys. It's aimed at the 30 or 40 people that are out there that are making decisions on operating systems to go into a mobile phone. Symbian are going, here it is. It's like a show court, and they're putting it all out on display.
That's right, Ewan. And at least we forget, I mean, the EKA2 kernel is relatively new. And one of the things it does actually enable, or it enabled a while back, was the single chip Symbian phones, which is a reason why they're so cheap. And traditionally, smartphones have an application processor and a sort of a cellular or a sort of real-time processor for handling the telecommunications aspects of things. And one of the things that this new kernel enabled was to do everything on a single chip, which obviously cut the bill of materials. And this is something that other, you know, smartphone platforms really haven't caught up to in quite the same way. You know, the sort of Symbian phones out there, and pretty much the vast majority of Symbian phones, with the exception of some of the high-end ones, are all single chip. And that's something that their competitors generally can't boast. So it's a good example of sort of, you know, people often say, how can you say that Symbian is technologically ahead? Well, this is one area where they very clearly are, and has a very real impact in terms of the cost of a device, which at the end of the day is actually still the primary driving force behind why someone buys one device over another. I should say there are some single chips running on other smartphone platforms, but not anywhere near the same extent as sort of Nokia is on the Freescale chipset, which is in all the recent E-series phones, you know, 6730, and many of the N-series devices as well.
Yeah, moving on to other news, guys. OviStore has just enabled re-downloads, if that makes sense. I know we reported on this about a month or so ago, but the provisioning of re-downloading seemed to be rather patchy. They've now put out an official statement, and provided you're logged in with your original username and on a phone that's software compatible with the original device you downloaded on, you should be able to re-download. Now, things look fairly good at this end, but I haven't bought a huge amount of stuff. Rafe, what have you found at your end?
Yes, I found that most of the things I bought are available. There are some things which are clearly between the S63rd edition and S65th edition device where isn't compatible, and actually I think that's a good thing, because it avoids user confusion if they have got two devices or have changed from one to the other, because otherwise I imagine it could be a nightmare for support calls. There are a few things which I think should be compatible which aren't, and I suspect there may still be a switch for certain applications, and certainly some applications which are either subscription based or something like that would actually make sense if they're not available for re-download. But we saw this being trialled a while back, and we wrote about it then. But this has now been officially announced on the Ovi blog, I would welcome it with open arms. And I'm glad to see, you know, when this first started out originally, it was just onto the same device as you had originally bought the content on. And as you said at the beginning, Steve, it's now actually on any compatible device. And given that people do tend to upgrade their devices, I think it's pretty reasonable to expect to be able to keep your content as you move between devices. I'm not sure developers will be entirely happy about that, but that has been the sort of pattern that's been established on the Android iPhone app stores. And so I think, the industry has already moved on that, away from what was the traditional pattern elsewhere, to be honest. Developers may not agree with me, but when you're talking about it as app stores in general, I think that's the way where you have to go. And I think fair enough, between S63rd edition, S65th edition, there is a difference. And no doubt that will apply later on down the road when there's big software upgrades. And I really think, when you're talking about an individual consumer, you should be licensing to a consumer and not to a phone. But I think it's reasonable to expect a consumer to buy again if they're having it on a completely new version, where the developer will have had to do a significant amount of work to get the compatibility or get the new version working. So sort of a good best of both worlds compromise. And there still are a few glitches in it that I've noticed. I've submitted a few sort of support messages to Nokia, like everyone else, not got a reply, but I hope they'll fix that. But it's a big step up from upgrading your firmware and losing all your software, not being able to download it, or losing your phone or whatever. So credit where it's due. The Ovi Store team have delivered here, and it does work.
Lo and behold, the Ovi Store is doing something it should have done when it launched, which is the cynical view. The other view is Nokia have spotted that they had a problem in the Ovi Store and they've fixed it. Congratulations to whoever spotted that there was a problem in the Ovi Store. Give that man or woman a wage increase, because I think there might be one or two other issues. The thing that always got me was this was something that was so simple, and Nokia just really got hit over the head with it in the press. And you'd think somewhere, I think what they need to do is they need to hire a couple of bloggers, possibly someone who has a similar name to myself, who just sits there at Finland and goes, that's rubbish. And nothing is allowed out into the public eye unless it passes through this tiger team of destruction. And their entire mission in life is like the Simsubs in the Apollo program, which is to get the astronauts to crash into the moon surface or to blow up their space capsule or burn up on re-entry because they did something stupid. Their idea was to catch all of that before they actually went out on the mission. And I wonder where Nokia's SimSups are. It's nice to see that they've got one, but there are more out there.
I think actually this is probably a case of internal management decisions. I'm sure there are people within Nokia who are well aware of the problems and want to fix them. And, after all, they do a lot of sort of focus group and listen to incoming feedback. Yeah. And I actually think this is a case of, we need to deliver a product and this isn't quite ready. How much does it matter? And, gauging the impact is difficult, because for, a lot of people commenting from the outside on blogs, this is something really basically needed. But for a lot of people who use the Ovi Store just to buy a ringtone or a wallpaper, which, after all, is what a lot of the Series 40 phones is about, less so at the high end, I would absolutely agree. It actually follows the traditional model. You buy it once and you sort of don't get it again, ever. And the fact that Nokia are pushing this model of being able to re-download throughout the Ovi Store, right across their portfolio of phones, will actually make a great experience for people who are used to operator portals where, it was very hard to re-download, say, a Java game or a wallpaper or a ringtone if you changed phone or lost it for some reason. And so, you know, it's interesting, depending on which level of the market you look at, it looks at like a better or a bad decision. And as I say, I suspect a lot of those decisions that get made in Nokia, it's not, that they set out deliberately to annoy people at the high end, but they sort of consider that that's just a small percentage of users. And the same thing would happen with firmwares and with N97 problems. See, there's, 5% of people that complain a lot, but there are 95% of people who are completely happy, and they make their money on the 95%, not the 5%, arguably. At least I think that's the reasoning.
But for those 5% write an awful lot of words online. And I do take your point that every team will have their own decisions. I just think that Nokia need one team who are allowed to go anywhere and everything has to go through them. There has to be a, it's almost like if they were a small company, that's the CEO's job. I actually think that a lot of these problems are because Nokia's too big and they have too many projects, and that they have to give those projects autonomy, and with the result, the people who are making the decision of, is that good enough, are bringing in personal bias. What's good enough for OV service A might not be good enough for the team that's running OV service B. And I just wonder how joined up they are at the back end.
Okay, I think we'll move on to the next topic, Ewan. I know you've been looking at Opera 10, which is a new...
Oh, yeah, I've been taking my time over this one.
Ewan's been writing a review of this for the last week, so can you give us a sort of status update on what you think of Opera 10? And it's worth pointing out, this is not Opera Mini, is it? This is something else. It's a native version, I believe, for the Symbian platform.
Indeed, yeah. When we came across this at the Symbian Exchange and Exposition, is the question that you actually had for me, Rafe, was, is this a new version of Mini or whatever? Opera Mobile is a C++ web browser that runs on your S60 third and fifth edition handsets. It's not the Mini. Now, the Mini one, many people will be familiar with, runs under Java, goes up to client server, scrunches it all down, squishes it back in. This is much more a native browser. And to be honest... This could replace the Nokia web browser. It's that good. This is a full-scale, proper rendering web browser. And none of this, I mean, you have the option to switch it into what they call Turbo Mode, which essentially replicates the facilities of Opera Mini. You go up to their server gets the page, it scrunches the pictures down, takes out all the extraneous stuff, and then squirts that into your handset, which reduces the amount of data you use, which is great if you're roaming, if you're in a country that has very high roaming bills, or in the developing countries like India or such, like, where you're still paying for your data by a significant truckload. But this is a good browser. Things that I really liked about this, and this is really simple, it works with my digital banking. And a lot of mobile browsers don't. It's nice. It's got secure sockets. It does that. It's got a good pen navigation. I like the fact that you can tap in and zoom in and you get the text squished into a column. So, for example, if, see the center column and all about Symbian, it's about 400 or 500 pixels wide. That's wider than the screen on the 5800, even if you zoom in. So what happens is, if you zoom in, yeah, it just puts the text into one column that's the width of the screen at a good font size so you can get to the information quickly. There are some things missing, as Rafe has rapidly typed out in the background. It doesn't have support for Flash, and it is beta, which means it's an incredible memory hog. You're not going to be able to run many more applications, certainly on the 5800, while you're in this browser. I like it. It's good. It's got a consistent user interface with their mini browser, with the mobile browser and their desktop browsers. It's tabbed browsing. It's got nice thumbnails. So when you open up a new window, it presents 9 tiny icons of your favorite websites. So you've got a visual indication where you want to put your great big massive finger down to open it up. I just like this. I'm glad to see that Opera is back. I remember the wait we had with the 6110. Was it the 6110? No, the 61. The second, the S60 version.
The 6600.
That's the one. Lots of numbers putting together. Thank you very much.
The really chunky one which could have done going on a diet.
The one that looked like a phaser from Star Trek The Next Generation.
That's the one.
That one.
That someone had sat on.
Well, speak for yourself. It was lovely getting Opera for that because we finally had a browser. Nokia have kind of taken over with their own browser now. Given the choice, I would go with Opera on my handset rather than Nokia web browser.
Okay. Let's move on. Loads of topics to get through. Google Mobile Search, Google Search, and Google Mobile App, depending on where you look, has been released, and it's rather significant. It's not just a point upgrade. This includes voice recognition, which I believe they've had on the Android phones for a few months now. But what I want to do is give you a live demo on an audio podcast, which will be interesting. But so, for example,
shall we play a game?
With it installed on my N86 here, you press the C from the home screen, and that will bring up the main Google Mobile App sort of portal screen, if you like, with links to mail and maps and YouTube. But there's a big button saying press and hold the green call key for voice search. So I'll do that, and I'll give it a typical search string. We'll see what happens. So I'm pressing it now. Clifton Suspension Bridge. And there we are. Clifton Suspension Bridge appears in a search box at the top of the screen, and pictures of the Clifton Suspension Bridge and Wikipedia and other articles about it. So let's try something else totally different. Right. Information on All About Symbian. information on all about Symbian appears perfectly transcribed. I hadn't tried that one. It was the first time I've tried it, and immediately up comes all about Symbian and related links. It really is incredibly impressive. I have no idea how it manages to recognize your voice so quickly and so accurately, but I'm enormously impressed. Now I can see what the Android people have been raving about for such a long time. And the significant thing about this is not just how cool it is. If you're on a phone which hasn't got a QWERTY keyboard, if I wanted to, for example, get a picture of the Clifton Suspension Bridge, on a QWERTY keyboard, you just type it out, and it takes 10-15 seconds. On a T9-style keyboard, especially if you've got real names involved, it might take you 35-40 seconds to type that in. Here, you just press one button, and you speak it. So let's try again. Let's give another example. I'll press and hold. Information. Jennifer Aniston. So I'll give a real name. Okay, it didn't like the Jennifer Aniston bit. We'll try it with just the name. Try again. Back. There we are.
Google doesn't like Jennifer Aniston. Yay!
There we are. I recognize it. Jennifer Aniston with her IMDb reference and Wikipedia, the top two entries. I can just click on the link and I'm there. So for a T9-style phone, a traditional S60 keypadded phone, this is a real, real boon, especially when there are real names involved or long words. And I, for one, have been using it every single day on the N86 and absolutely loving it. So if you haven't downloaded, that's Google mobile app, stroke search, version 2.3.8 is the one you want. Grab it, enjoy it, and report back.
Yep, and you can get it from m.google.com is the easiest link to put into your phone. I, too, have been trying this, and while occasionally it does make some errors, especially if you start trying to, you know, give it really difficult sentences, I was incredibly impressed. The other thing I think is particularly good, it does tie in with local search as well. So you can ask it to say map of and then give it a place name, and it will bring up a Google map. Obviously with sort of Nokia Maps and native Google Maps, it's, you know, a bit redundant in some senses. But you can also use all the other sort of Google sort of, terminals. So for example, you can go 8 times 8 and it will give you the answer, which is 64, obviously. But you can do more complex things. So you can ask it to say what 150 British pounds is in euros, and it will do that calculation automatically for you as well.
27p, isn't it?
Well, exactly. Or define in a term. And there's quite a lot of Google operators like that that you can use on the phone.
Steve?
I still feel a bit stupid talking to a phone. And I think that kind of, especially in a public place, is still a bit of an issue. But this is one of those instances where I do think voice input into a phone does make quite a bit of sense.
Steve, do me a favour. Do a search on recursive, would you?
Just the word recursive?
Yeah.
Okay, coming up. Right. Press and hold. Recursive. Recursive comes up. It brings up Wikipedia article on the visual form of recursion.
Because if you type recursive into Google in text, it actually comes up with, do you mean recursive?
Oh, yeah, that's a geek joke. Right. Let's try some of the things that Rafe was mentioning, actually. Off the top of my head, square root 135 just says how to... Oh, there we are, 11.61. That is really impressive. And I didn't know about the map thing either, Rafe. So I cannot emphasize the importance of this Google mobile app. And it's probably, along with the main Google Maps itself, become the first download on any new phone I pick up. So do go try that. A couple more news items before we finish. The Symbian have released a concept video for a next-generation UI. Some people have said this appears to be on a real device. I somehow doubt that. Rafe, you were the one who posted the story. What were your impressions of this concept?
Well, this concept was actually shown off at CO9, and it's now available publicly. You can have a look on the front page of All About Symbian. You should be able to see it, or it's available on YouTube as well. And what this was is really an idea of what a future Symbian UI might look like. It's not sort of part of the product roadmap or planning, but it's introducing several of the concepts and ideas that the foundation has for the UI. So just to take a very few of them, because really you need to go and see the video yourself. One of the interesting things was replacing the sort of bottom soft keys, where at the moment we have sort of options and close, or, you know, two soft keys, with a toolbar with four icons and text on it. And this is in an effort to try and flatten the hierarchy, for example, of Symbian. You know, typically everything, all the commands hang off the options menu. In this instance, you'd have the four most common ones at the bottom, which would be very quick to access, and then have a menu at the top of the screen. And actually, you see similar things sort of in Android, a little bit in iPhone, and particularly in MIMO. And there are some other things like, you know, being able to do gestures on the phone, you know, more customizable home screen, which is really widget-based, sort of moving away from the application grid paradigm to one that's sort of a widget-based home screen paradigm. You know, rather than applications, you're doing tasks and, you know, tying in very closely sort of the social web with the phone. So there's sort of almost a seamless connection. And so really it's just a presentation of some of the ideas that Symbian has for UI. And I think it's a good example of how the UI is not standing still. And we're expecting the big changes, obviously, in Symbian 4. There will be some little ones in between now and then. For example, something like multiple home screen support, which I think comes in Symbian 3. And even in Symbian 2, we've got some changes. You know, the N97 sort of widget-based home screen becomes standard as part of the platform. But this video is really an expression of intent from Symbian, and people shouldn't mistake it as this is what the future UI will look like, but it does show some of the effort that Symbian are putting into it, and it was sort of, you know, one of their sort of whizzy bits that people can go and see and understand what sort of things they're looking at. And they're asking for comments and contribution and feedback. So go and have a look at it, as it's sort of an idea of where things might go. You know, I had a few comments on the video, you know, this is what's already been done on Android. Well, that's part of the point, clearly. You're going to build on existing UI ideas. They want to add in their own. You know, there were some aspirational ideas about how augmented reality could be used. It's only a 50-second video, but, you know, a glimpse of where things might go on the Symbian platform and just UI in general. So I think an interesting statement of intent, or an interesting little production from the Symbian Foundation. Well worth a look.
I love the fact that it looks very much like the old Apple Newton operating system. And all this moving up in the slides and the circle tabs. On a slightly related issue, though, in case people haven't got it yet, Symbian have released the theme, which has all the little cartoon icons and everything that they use in all their presentations and everything. Can I say, I really like it?
I love it. Yeah.
I know, it's actually replaced Sunrise on my E75, so ask me again in a week if it's still there. Will probably be the final test, but it's nice, and it's these nice little cute things that I think they should keep doing. I mean, they on the phone, they've already released screensaver for Windows and everything. This just keeps everything in their mind, and obviously, of course, it forces all of your employees to have exactly the same theme on their phone.
Have you seen the duck, though? The duck that swims across your screen instead of a progress bar.
Yes.
No, it's not duck. It's a fish. That's right. It's a fish swims across.
Duck fish.
We should ask a helicopter option as well. A Symbian helicopter.
It's interesting that I guess you remember when the Symbian Foundation came out with their new brand, there was quite a lot of negative reaction to it, but it's certainly grown on me over time, and it does sort of, it's a bit different. So it's a bit like the Symbian Foundation in that respect. And I rather like all the various cartoon characters. And they were also giving away an Oyster card holder, which had the same cartoon characters at the Symbian show, which I've now replaced my boring blue Oyster card holder with. So, yes, the theme is another nice touch.
I would just like to say, if you are the cartoonist who is doing all of this, please get in touch. We'd like to interview you and have you on a later podcast.
Absolutely, absolutely. Talking of podcasts, Ray said I could plug mine, my other podcast, that is. So I'm going to stick it in here before he cuts it out. Phone Show Chat is a little audio podcast I've been doing once a week with Tim Salmon, who's also an All About Symbian regular. And both he and I go through a huge number of devices on a huge number of platforms. So it's really a companion to my Phone Show video podcast, and a way of just, as Ray very, very kindly and informatively puts it, like two geeks chatting down the pub. So if you want to join Tim and I down the pub for the Phone Show Chat, then do follow my link at 3lib.ukonline.co.uk, and you can find more about it there, so do enjoy that.
And I'm just going to add in, because obviously Steve might be a little bit biased when talking about his own podcast, that I've been listening to the last few shows, and I really think that Steve and Tim have hit their stride, and the last one ranged everything from applications of the week to comments about Android to the new N97 upgrade, and a really chatty, informal show, which, if you find this All About Symbian Insight podcast a bit tech heavy, I can certainly recommend having a listen. And even if you're here for the you know, the techie content here on the All About Symbian podcast, you know, you can take a more consumer orientated view. As I said, yeah, it's a bit like chatting down the pub, but the production values are very good as well. So I give it my thumbs up, and I just want to recommend it as a quick listen, especially as they recommended the All About Symbian Insight in their last show. So, you know, quid pro quo.
Yeah, and hey, we have the production values. We have a theme tune, which is something we're still struggling to find for All About Symbian.
I found one for the first show.
And then I banned it because I didn't like it. So I'm still looking for a suitable theme song. Maybe we need to mash up some ringtones or something like that. But if you've got some ideas, get in touch. You know, you can do that via our Twitter accounts. So I'm at Rafe Blanford. There's at Ewan, Ewan's just switched over to his first name only rather than just Ewan Spence, and there's at Steve Litchfield or the All About Symbian one, which is at AAS. So please get in touch or do it via email, Rayford All About Symbian, etc., etc.
And great. No, I'm not telling anybody who I sacrificed to get my Twitter name change.
Yeah, I wonder if I can get at Steve. No, maybe not. Mr. Jobs and Bulmer might get in ahead of me.
I was going to say you're ahead in the alphabet, but Steve Ballmer's a B, so yeah, he would be ahead of you.
Yeah. You sound like you're closing the show. We have got a couple of other brief news items to get in before we finish. Sports Tracker, which everyone was wondering what on earth has happened to this on S65th edition. It was there as a kind of a beta and then disappeared altogether. And apparently the news has filtered out that there's a new company being set up. Ewan, what's this about?
It's a spin-out company. The two people inside Nokia who championed Sports Tracker have now walked out of, well, they haven't walked out of Nokia, they've left Nokia. And Sports Tracker Technologies AV, as I recall, Finnish company, basically doing exactly the same as what they've done with Sports Tracker. But I think basically, because it was diverging away from where OV Maps was going to go, Sports Tracker was becoming more and more isolated. So Nokia had the choice of either killing it, which they have done before with other services, or, you know, given that this is a service that Nokia actually managed to get right and people love and gets lots of good press, have spun it into a separate standalone company that can do whatever it likes. Nokia, of course, will be using them as a supplier, and Sports Tracker will, over time, have a new release, will have new features added in, will be able to fly like a bird, and a bird that you can track in a sort of scary James Bond way in Goldfinger with a small magnet that's in his shoe. Congratulations to guys. I suspect that you had to sacrifice more people to the lawyers than I did to Twitter, but I'm really excited to see what they're doing, and it is great to see Nokia supporting the startups in this way as well. And I'm confidently expecting in about 15 months time, Nokia will buy the company back again, the two guys will be made VP, they will be given massive multi-million dollar payouts, and the service will die again, and nobody will mention Doppler in the same breath.
And there's your prediction for the week. One final news item, a BBC iPlayer widget has just had a big upgrade to version 2.5. As far as I know, they haven't actually increased the compatibility list. I was rather hoping that the devices like the E75 might make it onto the list this time around. Maybe that's coming. But version 2.5 does bring a slicker interface at the widget end. Unfortunately, you still have to spawn out to S60 Web to actually do the downloads, and I can't help thinking there's got to be a slicker way of doing that. Also, I was rather disappointed that 2.5 only lists the top three items under the highlighted TV and popular TV. The old version listed all, whatever it was, 10 or 12 on each. So you just had to scroll down one page to see all the programs that you might want to download for that day or that week. Now you have to kind of see the top three, think, yeah, Top Gear's not there or whatever. Click on the more and then wait while that loads to get the more popular or the more highlights, then go back and then get the full top 10 for the other category. In my opinion, the UI is actually worse now. It may be slicker and look prettier, but it actually takes longer to get around. Have either of you tried iPlayer 2.5?
Yeah, I've tried the new version on the N97, and I sort of agree with you. You know, there's less available on the home screen. That is set against the fact that things do seem to load considerably quicker. And one of the other benefits, now I don't know when exactly this was introduced, but it seems that at least on some content streams you're getting a higher quality, so matching the resolution of the device a little bit better, and whether it's increased bit rates when we're over Wi-Fi, I'm not sure. It is worth pointing out that the availability of features does vary depending on how you're connecting. For example, only Vodafone and Three customers can stream over 3G. As well as the availability of downloads between different devices. But also different programs actually seem to have different numbers of streams created for them. So the most popular ones, you tend to get the optimized experience, you get the best available. But sometimes some of the other ones, it sort of seems to step you down to a lower quality version. I don't know how prevalent that is and whether it's changing. But sort of, yes, as you say, Steve, slightly mixed feelings about this update, although I'm able to cope with it because I tend not to use the popular stuff so much. I know what I'm looking for. I do a quick search, bring it up, and it operates nice and speedily, and the download links are now a little more obvious. All in all, it seems to work very well, and it's still incredibly cool technology being able to do this. Watch TV on demand, you know, a really great service. And I sort of think of it, I thought, you know, if I'd known this was going to be the future, even, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, I'd have sort of been slightly amazed. So, you know, credit to the BBC for making this available.
Yeah.
And it's still one of the big selling points of the phones. And I noticed there's actually something that's on the Sony Ericsson Satya integrated right into the sort of the media menu. So rather than, as we do on the Nokia, you know, you go into music and you might see artists and podcasts, et cetera, et cetera. On the Satya, you actually see iPlayer as an entry. And I think that makes an enormous amount of sense because people know what it is, know how it works, and can get into the program they want to watch very quickly, and it all works very slickly and very smoothly. So yeah, thumbs up from me at least.
Yeah,
in general.
Absolutely. If we're recording this so you can listen to it in the second week of November, and a brief plug, if you do go straight to iPlayer and run, don't walk, to search for Eric Clapton and download Eric Clapton and Steve Winwood live at Madison Square Garden. It should be available for another week, and it is stonking. Some of their rendition of Voodoo Child, which I track you and will know well, is absolutely stunning. So do yourself a favour and grab that on BBC iPlayer. And you can get the new widget by going to bbc.co.uk/mobile/iPlayer in web on your phone, and highly recommended all round.
Is this the point where I recommend, where we remind you of your wonderfully pervasive access and knowledge at the Nokia Music Quiz before SEE, Steve?
Yeah. Best not to remind me. For those that haven't heard the story, where there was an impromptu quiz going on upstairs at the Nokia flagship store, and we got Ewan on the team of three. I thought, great, Ewan will win it for us. And then there was an empty space, so I was plunked in the middle, and basically Ewan got all five of the six questions in the first 2 seconds, in some cases before the music had even started properly, and I was left floundering on zero. So my music is selective, but of high quality.
My favourite moment was when the quizmaster came over and said, so Steve, what do we need to ask so you can get one right? And your only reply was something where the answer is Hawkwind.
No, I didn't. My answer
yes, you did.
This was something from the 70s.
You said Hawkwind.
Anyway, before we squabble too much, we're going to end the show. Rafe's already done the end plugs for our Twitter accounts. So it's goodbye from me, Steve Litchfield.
Goodbye from me, Rafe Blanford.
And now it's time to say goodbye from me, Ewan Twentson. Now it's time to real goodbye. Goodbye.
Just
goodbye,
once, I'd like Ewan to end the podcast normally. Just once. That's all I ask.
I did in the last show.
See you guys.
Bye-bye.